Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Think Big. Our guest today is Davina Kalnohi. Davina, please tell us where you are in the world and what you do for a living.
Yeah, so I'm in Thousand Oaks, California, just outside of Los Angeles. And I'm currently the CEO and co-founder of Element Apothec. And I also do advisory services for startups as well.
Amazing. That's awesome. So could you tell us a little bit about how you got into this space? Tell us about the brand and kind of your story leading up to founding this brand. What kind of really was the big catalyst to get you started in founding a business like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think ever since I was young, I always had this entrepreneurship thing about me. As a young kid, I had car wash businesses and babysitting and anything I could do to make money, but to build a little business that I could, selling flower lays in Hawaii to the tourists and stuff like that. But then I actually went to school to be an engineer, did an internship at JPL, and I loved space and wanted to be an astronautical engineer. But it wasn't all that it was cut out to be from my perspective. And so then I transitioned into technical recruiting because I could speak the language of the engineers that we would be hiring. And that kind of parlayed into helping with HR, operations, business strategy, often working for startups and kind of being a, whatever it was that they needed to fill in. But I really found my purpose in helping with operations and strategy and leadership development and goal alignment within corporations and things like that. And so I moved into doing my own consulting for startups, advisory services, making sure when even they got capital or when they were launching their business that they understood all of the things that they needed to think about. Not just where they're at today, but where do they want to be in 5 years, 10 years, and how do I align, everything from the business strategy, the operational plans, the enterprise goals to make sure that they could be successful in that, helping support and build leadership teams. And I was doing that and realized that I still had this entrepreneurship bug. And so I actually launched a DL site similar to Living Social and Groupon, but really with a community feel to give back to the community, partner with schools for fundraising and support local businesses and keep people within the community instead of Living Social Groupon that people travel all over the place, but there's not often allegiance. That didn't end up panning out for various reasons, but it was a great experience. And then next day, I actually launched a social media app with my niece, which was really cool. We were doing quite well at the time that Musical.ly was acquired by TikTok. And we understood that there was just not going to be any way that we would be able to compete with this big, massive giant. And it was just an interesting space to be in, morals and things like that that were coming up. So I always tried to live with purpose and passion, and something that I grew up with, especially with my Hawaiian culture, is living with aloha and spirit and giving back to people. So I was looking for what next I could do with holding that passion. I think as an entrepreneur, it's something that you really have to be passionate about what you do, because it's hard. And if you don't have that passion, it could be really challenging. So it came up to this point that my great aunt had actually created these incredible products, and she created them out of a need. She was quite sick, multiple medical conditions, autoimmune diseases, and didn't really know what to do about her health. And she started researching other cultures and plant-based remedies, and that people were doing things for their health that were different and outside of traditional medicine. So her kitchen became like this apothecary workshop. She would blend stuff, mix stuff, bottles all over the place, ended up getting certified in plant-based remedies and essential oils, and created products that really helped her, not just her though, because people in the community took notice, and she went from being barely out of her house, not feeling well, to actually living a decent lifestyle. And they're like, what did you do? She changed her diet, she was exercising, but what else was the magic key? And she started creating products to help them. Over 8 years, she created 43 custom formulations. Wow. But she was also just doing it out of her kitchen. And I used her products. I had bought products for friends and for my family. And so there was really this passion of, and I already was focused on, clean products and taking care of my health and exercise and all of these things that aligned very well with what she was doing. So she said, you know, my goal is to take these products from the kitchen to the world. And if you want to do that, then here's everything. Like, she basically handed over all of these formulations. And it was in that moment that I realized that we really could have an impact on the quality of people's lives. And from that moment, there was no question of my passion. Like, I knew at the end of the day exactly what we needed to do. A lot of work went behind it. We built a whole medical team, created products, reformulated them with our doctors, built a whole system and operations and manufacturing. Launching into the CPG space was nothing I had ever imagined I would do in my life, actually selling a product. But here I was now really trying to grow, learn, understand, and build the business, though, with the support and advisors around us that filled the gaps of the things that I had no idea at the time what I was doing.
That's amazing. And I'll still say that is the one common denominator. All the people that come on the pod that have, you know, successful businesses is you need that conviction. And most of the people that come on the pod, businesses are doing quite well. They're experiencing growth. And you can always tell, like I can already tell just speaking with you for the last, you know, 5 or 6 minutes or so, like the conviction is obviously there. The passion is there. I think that's the one really important prerequisite for anybody's success. I mean, you're learning like what it takes to be in the CPG space and, you know, do all these things and be constantly learning and outsource where you need to. It's a lot. It's a full-time job and then some. So I think that, really important for people to hear that with everybody that comes on the pod, to help people like understand that, you know, you're not alone in feeling this way. It's like that's as long as the passion is there, the work comes along and it's always doable. So I appreciate that insight. So I'm curious just a little bit about the kind of strategy with the brand and how it's grown. So what would you say is kind of the breakdown of, you know, the revenue generation for the brand? I see you obviously sell online. Is that primarily where, you know, where you're doing most of the business through your e-com store? What other channels do you exist on where that's also generating revenue for the brand?
Yeah, I mean, we started direct to consumer to really test the market, understand our consumer. There's so many things that go into building the business, you know, when you think about marketing and really having clear definition of what the messaging's going to be. I mean, even the look and feel and what's your target consumer. There's so many things that you do, and direct to consumer allows you to kind of test out some of this, right? Is this the target audience? Mm-hmm. Are the people responding to the ads that we're creating? Is this the messaging that is interesting to people? The packaging, what really is our demographic and our customer interface, and allows you to get that type of feedback and really have some of those metrics and understanding where traffic comes from and stuff like that. So we launched direct to consumer, but always with a plan that it would be more. And those other verticals that we're now moving into is, you know, traditional retail, but being very specific about the places and spaces that we want to be to keep the brand alignment. I think some people go into it and they'll take any opportunity they can get that might diminish the quality of the brand or the perspective of the brand or cause you to have to lower your price points, you know, different things. So for us, it was being really intentional in places and spaces that our consumers would be, but also that they would see value in the products that we have. So, you know, wellness stores, grocery stores that are more natural focused, you know, things like that, that we're partnering with pharmacies and stuff like that. But we also have another vertical, which is practitioners and pharmacists as well.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, we are really focused on education because I think there's so many customers now, so many patients that are looking for alternative remedies or so many supplements and so many things out there. And also the doctors aren't really sure who to turn to. What products can they recommend? What products can they trust? So we're trying to come in as the trusted resource, helping to provide education around alternative plant-based remedies, cannabinoids, adaptogens, all of these things, training doctors never got in school, and to be able to help them understand how they can better provide continuity of care for their patients. So we have kind of these three verticals, which is direct to consumer and a more traditional wholesale retail, and then also working through practitioners as well.
That's amazing. So what is your kind of reach in the retail space been so far? Are you still kind of regional, or how far has the reach been expanding into pharmacies and those other verticals?
Yes. I mean, we just kicked it off last year, the end of last year, actually, second half of push into retail. So, and we've got some good progress in there. And we also are talking to some national retailers as well, which is really exciting for us. It's a lot, and we wanted to make sure. And I think for anyone building out a CPG brand is taking the time to get there, because you'll hear these horror stories of companies that launched quickly, they got national distribution, but they couldn't support financially what it was required to be.
Right.
In large national retail sounds exciting, but you see a lot of those brands shut down or not able to be successful because of it. So we were very intentional in like building out the direct-to-consumer channel, understanding our customer, retail location, making sure we had all the support from fulfillment and logistics systems and all of these compliance things that you have to be able to go into these conversations with retailers and like, okay, we know exactly what it is that we're doing on this back end now. Still learning as we go some of it, but also understanding. So that's been good and it will continue to be our focus in the next years. On the doctors and retail, we're starting to get some, you know, definitely some interest there. We're leading with education. That really is the most important thing for us. Whether or not they end up using our products, or at least we're educating the doctors to be able to provide better care for their patients. And then hopefully they'll recommend our products because we're the ones that help them support that. But we're getting some good traction there, talking to some larger health groups and stuff like that to be able to support them. So the years ahead look promising for the company. And I think that practitioners are at a space where they're ready for these conversations and looking to see how they can provide better care for their patients, at least most of them, not all of them, but most of them.
Right. No, that's amazing. So, you know, through your kind of like e-commerce venture to start, I know you're getting a lot of great feedback. That's one of the best parts of selling direct to consumer, of course. So what were you kind of finding was, you know, your main demographic, like, you know, what kinds of things as far as like your marketing efforts, what kind of demographics were you finding and do you still find are, you know, resonating most with the brand?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Our demographic is very mixed, male, female. I think 55% female, 45% male. I mean, we actually did a study through UCLA through their EMBA program. Their thesis project is basically a company that they work with to help them understand challenges and things like that. So we did this program with them with the idea of like part of it is exactly finding our target demographic because we do have this split. Our age ranges across the board also. So like we're going to find it because it's much easier to market to a very specific type of audience. Right. Than to be broad across the thing. I think when we launched, we're like, well, just we're for everybody, right? But you can't have your marketing messaging for everybody because you don't have the money to support that as a startup. And also it's not going to resonate with everyone. So we did this study. What was interesting is what we found out is it's not necessarily a demographic, but it's a psychographic that we target. And that's, you know, they're focused on their health, their well-being. They're looking for function and type in terms of the types of products. They're not sleeping. They're having stressful days. They're experiencing a lot of discomfort. And so we've tried to fine tune our messaging more into the psychographic realm. Obviously, we target specific demographics with the types of advertising we do or email messaging and things like that to attract them, social media as well. But overall, kind of is more looking at what is a need base that somebody has and how can we, you know, help them support that, whatever gender they are, whatever age, you know, they might be also.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing to hone in on because you can't really like define those types of problems affect everybody in all demographics, right. Of course. So I think that's really important to, you know, because you need to hone in on something, like you say, like, you know, you can't compete with, you know, some of these largest brands in the world that can do this like mass marketing that appeals to everybody. You just can't do it, right? But to hone in on that, I think is a really interesting perspective and not something I've heard too much in the past. So I think that's really unique and really interesting. So as you hone in on that, you know, how was your strategy kind of, you know, molded into that as you started to get that feedback, where you realize like it's not necessarily more male or female, or it's not necessarily in like a different age range demographic, but more of like a psychographic, as you say. Like, how have things kind of changed for you, like in your marketing strategies after you kind of got some of that feedback and, you know, kind of realized some of those things?
Yeah, I mean, it was really leaning into that. So even on our website, we made adjustments. You know, if you're searching for the products, it's by function of the relief, all of these things, because now we understand how we need the structure of the website to work within what people are looking for, our SEO strategy to be aligned with the types of things that people are searching for in terms of the support that they might need for the product, our email messaging, even our blog content to all be aligned with this idea of like, how do we help service the customers or the specific people that are coming to us, rather than just putting them in a box, like this is the exact type of customer. It is a little bit more challenging to take that path because it obviously it's easier if you're just we're targeting a woman 30 to 35. And like, this is the exact things. But we also didn't want to, it's an interesting challenge, but it's just making sure though that we're very aligned and intentional across the board and all of the things that we do. That doesn't mean, you know, we have a support specifically for women's health that's on our website. So it doesn't mean that we're also not targeting and understanding, you know, when we go to place an ad, we know what age range that we might want to select and what location and, mm-hmm. you know, salaries, you know, all of these things, right? You want to be very specific when you're doing that. But we also understand that the type of person that's going to come is beyond that. And they are looking for more of how is this product or this community really going to improve my life or quality of life per se.
Yeah, no, that makes so much sense. And it is always a constant, you know, kind of grapple with that, where you want to hone in and be so specific so that your targeting can be really on point for that, for a, you know, certain avatar or a certain demographic. But you also don't want to limit yourself to, you know, something that's that specific, the, because you know that your product can help a very wide range of people. It is, it's one of the most difficult things I would say probably to do with a brand like yours, or pretty much like really any, like, you know, growing online smaller brand, is it's a really difficult thing to grapple with. And I think you have a really unique and interesting perspective, like focusing on the, you know, psychographic side of it, as you say. That's really cool. I really appreciate you sharing that. And so tell me, say you're to speak kind of like a year from now, like about a wrap up Q1 2024. And where do you see the growth for the brand going into 2025 relative to, you know, how the growth has been the past couple of years? Is it kind of similar? Is it accelerating similar growth, or where are we kind of at, you would think, looking in 2024?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we launched during COVID, so it's quite interesting, but we also realize, you know, what better time to start as people are looking to help take care, better care of themselves.
Yeah.
So it started out a little bit slow because it was hard to get the message out there, and because so many people shifted to like everything online and advertising was the only way to reach people. But we've really been fortunate in continuing to see year over year growth with the business, increasing, you know, as we went through our website, increasing conversion rates, increasing cart value, increasing the subscription and retention of our consumers. The good thing is our product isn't, it's something people might continue to take. Oftentimes their sleep issues or comfort or stuff like that continue on. So we've really been looking at strategies also to not only get new customers, but to retain the customers that we currently have. And now as we're moving into the retail and working with practitioners, we're starting to see more growth accelerate. And we expect those channels are going to help push us beyond, you know, what we were expecting in terms of our growth if we had only stayed direct to consumer.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And, you know, speaking of, you know, customer retention, kind of think of that as like, you know, two sides of the same coin, where, you know, your customer retention on the retail side and, you know, your customer, you know, retention on the direct to consumer side. Mm-hmm. On the direct to consumer side, what kind of strategies are you employing after somebody buys from the website? You obviously, you know, have their information, which is obviously one of the advantages to selling, you know, direct as well. Like you say, you know, in order to get that feedback, which I know you said was really helpful, especially in the beginning. You know, how do you kind of use that information and that kind of data you're able to get from people in order to continue to provide value over the lifetime to, you know, drive recurring business?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is bringing awareness to some of the other products that we have. Also understanding where they're at in their life. We offer free one-on-one consultations, and ideally,
that's very cool.
Buys our product, then we'd like to set up a call with them and understand what other need states they might have and how we could support them, or maybe recommendations of other products that they might be needing to take to provide additional supplements and help with their well-being. So that's a great strategy, right? Because you're actually able to talk to somebody and understand where they're at and create the right personal connection. But we also continue to provide a lot of education through our blogs and emails and things like that, because again, it's helping support where they might be at in their life and what other products they might need. But then also the importance of consistency and routine. So they do want to move it to a subscription. So, you know, they do get their product right to their door every month. It's something that they don't have to think about. So those are a few of the different strategies that we use for retention, is, you know, building the relationships, making them aware of what other products that we have, and then providing that support, ongoing support for them to help them.
That's amazing. So, and then, you know, thinking about, you know, kind of the other side of the, you know, the journey of a customer, you obviously have, like, you know, your funnels that go to, as far on the, you know, on the e-commerce direct to consumer side, I suppose. Then you have like your funnels that drive like you know, business through your website and eventually check out, and then, you know, you get into, you know, that and a great strategy for retention and recurring business. What kind of channel do you operate on, you know, to drive business to the website on the direct to consumer side? Are you big on social media? Are you running any like kind of paid ads? I know you mentioned a little bit about, you know, SEO, search engine optimization. What kind of channels are you doing your SEO, and are you doing any paid ads as well on any of those channels?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little tricky for us because we do have cannabinoids in our products. And there's not a lot of opportunities to do paid promotions. We can't do paid ads on social media. We just got a TikTok shop approved and then it was shut down. So that makes it a little bit tricky. We believe so much in the value of adding that ingredient. We don't look at it as, you know, this is the product, but it's one of, you know, many, many ingredients that we use, but adding that seems value. So it's worth it for us. It's a challenging. So we do look at a lot more of the organic paths and opportunities. So looking at email list, building giveaways with other companies so we get access and can share customer and email data. SEO becomes really important. And SEO is a big driver. It takes time. I recommend anybody starting, like, don't wait to start SEO. Start it from day one. As you're building out your website, start writing blog content. Like, that is long-term strategy, but the sooner you start, the better it's going to have in the long run for you. And then, you know, we look at social media for sure as a channel to drive interest. We've tested out some ads where we can do ads, and looking at programmatic as well. So it's something we want to do more of. We're actually actively fundraising. So when we secure more capital, we'll be doing a lot more on specific platforms with programmatic advertising. And now we can advertise on Meta. We have to go through this whole crazy certification.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
That other companies don't have to, but it'll be worth it. So we'll go through that process. But I mean, a lot of it is, you know, also being out there. We do a lot of events. We do a lot of speaking events and webinars and any ways that we can think about. And I think as an entrepreneur, as a startup, you only have so much funding. And so you have to be really creative with how you're gaining the interest and the awareness of your brand. And you can't always rely just on paid advertising or, you know, throwing money at the wall, because it's not always an effective strategy, or you'll burn through your cash so fast you won't be able to sustain the business. So employing these different techniques for marketing or tactics are really have been beneficial for us. And I definitely highly recommend people utilizing them as well, because any agency will be like, just give us all this money and we'll do all this stuff. And we did it early too. We worked with an agency. We spent way more money than we should have. We weren't really quite ready. We hadn't improved the metrics on our site. We weren't converting as well. So we were building all this top of funnel, but we were basically just throwing away cash at the time. So we took a step back and we're like, wait a second, what do we really need to do? Let's build in the right email funnels. Those are absolutely critical as you're building top of funnel, and SEO and driving people. How do you capture email when they come to your site, and how do you convert them and build through, you know, the whole user experience, UX experience. So those are the things that we focused on. And then, you know, building in all of these different marketing tactics to bring that top of funnel traffic.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. And I'm curious, you know, because you have cannabinoids in the product, why is that such a big like stopping point for like so many of these channels? Like, is this like a regulatory issue? Like, what is that? Because I'm sure, you know, with the, you know, viewer base that we have, I'm sure there's plenty of folks that are seeking to be entrepreneurs in the space of things that probably will include cannabinoids, as so many states are, you know, legalizing things in that space now. So what is the big like hold up with that?
You know, it's mixed. I mean, although the Farm Bill in 2018 basically allowed for hemp, and we use hemp derived products, which allows us to sell across all 50 states, but federally it's still illegal because they haven't approved, you know, cannabis banking and stuff like that. So it's just this mixed film. You have bigger retailers like, I don't know, say Target, who's still skeptical of it, but then you have CVS and Walgreens that are carrying these products across the entire US. So, I mean, a lot of it is just a fear. I think there's still so much fear around cannabinoids. It's a stigma that's existed for, you know, multiple generations of people through care, through all of these things. And it's helping people understand, like, we actually have an endocannabinoid system. We produce our own cannabinoids in our bodies right now. It's just a phytocannabinoid. It's nothing different than taking a supplement of, you know, we take in vegetables, but we might not take enough of vitamin C or something like that. So we supplement it. But there's so much fear. I think that fear is what is driven a lot of the legislation or restrictions and regulations around it. Because technically with the farm bill, they would be able to do this. Now, if we were cannabis or had THC in our products, there's still a lot of regulations around that. Therefore, it would make sense why some of these regulations exist. But it continues to baffle us why, you know, in one place it's okay and then another place it's not. I mean, at least Meta's a big move now. They have the certification that we can go through, but it's expensive. No other CPG industry has to, you know, pay all of this money just to get their product certified, tested, when you know there's all of these like terrible supplements and food products and beauty products on the market. You're like, people are taking junk. They don't on Amazon, whatever, right? So it's interesting. It's an interesting thing. We are hoping, you know, at some point there's approved federal regulations around banking, maybe descheduling around some of the cannabis plant in itself. And unfortunately, hemp is so attached to that. Although, you know, it's two separate things. It's hard for people to really grasp that. And I think that that just has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, that's kind of exactly what I was thinking. I was like, I can understand if it was, you know, had some kind of like psychoactive, you know, portion to it, if there was THC in it or something. But like, short of that, it is baffling. I mean, how difficult it still is, short of that, to even like do some of the things that you're trying to do. And what's really interesting with, I know you mentioned the like banking is, I have family like out in Nevada and Colorado, and we're obviously some of like, you know, the pioneers of, you know, recreation legalizing, you know, marijuana at the time. And they know business owners that have grown to be like very quite large in those states. And they say that the banks won't take their money, basically, because the FDIC can't insure accounts through a bank that are in the business of doing something that's still a scheduled drug in the eyes of the federal government. So they're operating in like totally like cash, like huge amount of armored trucks of cash changing hands because they can't use banks. It's like, it really is like the Wild West when it comes to this stuff. But I mean, short of that, like with what you're trying to do, I'm pretty surprised that it's been like that much of a struggle for you to do those types of things. It's that is baffling. So
yeah, we had our PayPal account shut down. We've had
really
Square account shut down. My own personal PayPal account was shut down because I did my email and it was attached to. I mean, there are starting to be at least some banks that we can work with, but you know, for example, we can have a website on Shopify, but we can't use Shopify payments, Shopify logistics. So you have to have all of these extra things around the business, which is fascinating and understanding. But I mean, it also makes you very strong and persistent of like, we're going to find a solution to make sure that we are able to get these products. And we're also exploring the ideas of, you know, creating parallel products that are not cannabinoid based, just because we understand we don't want to limit that access to consumers, because maybe they still themselves have fear, the doctors they work with don't quite understand or whatever reason. So it's things that you know, as you grow as an entrepreneur and a founder, you really have to sometimes look at these opportunities for pivot and see what's in the best interest of the company. Not that we'll completely step away from it, because we really do believe that, you know, as human beings, our bodies have a need for additional cannabinoids to support homeostasis and manage inflammation. But we also don't want to limit that and rather step people into the process of being comfortable and have access to alternative remedies to products that they might need. So it's just one thing. Like I said, you're constantly evolving and reevaluating your business and year over year, making sure that you're on the right path. And that's important evolution of any brand, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, it's probably not surprising for you to hear, like a lot of people that come on the podcast are, you know, 3, 4 and the kind of 5-year-old growth space, where a lot of them started during COVID, which is the most interesting thing. I would say an even bigger percentage of them started around like 2017, 2018, right before COVID happened, and had to make like these huge pivots. So that's always a really interesting, you know, conversation that, you know, with across industries, I mean, because everything went online. So retail super like slowed down, you know, anything that was like brick and mortar basically had to go online and just make that entire transition to like not selling in a physical location anymore at all, which was like a lot of people's total business. So yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the big picture of, I think what people, you know, should hear as entrepreneurs listening to the pod is, you know, whether it's COVID, whether it's regulations from the government, you know, things are going to change and they're going to happen fast and you're not going to see it coming many of the times. And you do, you need the ability to pivot. And I think what you're proposing with yours is to maybe have some, you know, alternative SKUs or products out there, maybe without the cannabinoids, to be able to still go out and like test the messaging through these other channels that you're not, you know, able to do now. I think it's a really interesting perspective and a really healthy way to pivot, to still go get some feedback from these channels. So that ever does change or we're ever able to figure that out and maybe wise up to it a little bit, you know, but you still at least have some feedback to go off of at that time.
Yeah, definitely.
So a couple of questions, really two big things I always like to ask, like kind of towards the end of these conversations. One is around AI, of course, right? You know, with the advent of ChatGPT and these like thousands and thousands of AI tools that you're out here helping business owners, from everything to marketing to, you know, logistics and all those kinds of things. Have you found yourself integrating anything like that? Anything, you know, from like an AI chatbot on your e-commerce site to AI tools that manage like the entirety of like the logistics. Have you been employing and implementing anything like that in the business sense that's, you know, become like more in the public eye?
Yeah, I mean, I love technology, obviously, with my background in machine engineering and stuff. So yeah. AI is fascinating to me in terms of the intricacies and how it can help support the business. So we've looked at certain ways that we can integrate it. We're also being really cautious because it is such a personal touching product and you can't take away from those personal conversations and connections. So for us, it's kind of weaving it in the places and the spaces that we feel are more behind the scenes in terms of, you know, even our project management systems and tasks and stuff like that, less on the external communication that, you know, we, even our blog content and stuff, like we work with pharmacists to write the content and doctors, you know, we could supplement that with AI copy and be pushing out a lot more copy, but we really want it to be authentic and come from an educated resource. AI is getting there, but it's still not completely there with that ability and in some of those contexts. So yeah, we're looking at it, we're watching it, we're observing it, we're putting it into places where we think that it makes sense to streamline and help to manage and mitigate some of the things that we need to, like on the inventory side, like you said, on, you know, within our project management system and tasks. It definitely is helpful in like thinking about social media content creation where you can have it create a really cool background for you and put your product on there. But even then, like we're not using it to generate, you know, people or things like that. If we want it to still have this authentic feel to it. But, you know, we're definitely looking at incorporating it. It's an incredible tool, I think, used in the right ways. I think I always tell people just to be like where I advise them, like also be cautious of stepping away so far away from your business that you don't now understand how, if something goes wrong, that you need to step in and actually manage it and take care of it. So make sure you have all of that in place first and all your SOPs and everything. And then maybe it's time to think about considering how you can improve the functionality or timeliness or things like that of certain tasks or skills that the AI could help you with.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice, you know, and I think you're right in, you know, your specific space with talking about, you know, somebody's health in general. I mean, across, you know, any type of products you're doing that has to do with, you know, somebody's well-being and trying to improve their health, those are really personal conversations. And, you know, I don't think having, you know, maybe like a chatbot or something through the website, I don't think that would come off the best, because this is, and I really love that you do those consultations. I think that's a really unique, I think, angle with your brand specifically too. That definitely makes sense. And I think I heard like a really interesting like perspective on AI once, which was like, you go to school and, you know, you're doing like, you know, your math class at school, you're an engineer. So I'm sure you're in your APs and stuff when you're in high school and all those great things. But, you know, they teach you how to do things, you know, the right way, to do it organically and do it yourself the long way first before, you know, they allow you to go and use your Texas Instruments 85, like a crazy calculator that can do anything you want. But it's important so that you can understand if something's going wrong, where you can still be able to pinpoint it because you've done it manually. I think that that's kind of a similar thing with a lot of these AI tools. It's like, you can't just put all these systems on autopilot because the AI can do it, because you're not going to be able to realize where it's going wrong because you never like took the time to really understand like what it's supposed to look like what the output is supposed to be. So yeah, I think you're definitely right in that too. And I tend to agree. A big user, but still very, very skeptical and very careful with, you know, what I'm using it to implement and always double checking and, you know, over and over before I can like really trust something to do it and trust that it's going to be, you know, something I can use right away. That's awesome. So, and the other question I always love to ask, especially brands, you know, of kind of your age, I think it's like a perfect, you know, position to answer a question like this is, if you could go back to the inception of the brand, knowing everything you know now, everything you've learned along the way, all the pivots that you've made, all these kinds of things, you know, if you can give your past self one piece of advice at the beginning of the brand, you know, what do you think that one big thing would be?
You know, it would be not being so aggressive, because we went into it like, this is a great time for the market. We're going to just explode. We were spending, you know, we got some early funding. We did a WeFunder crowdfunding campaign, and we spent money in ways that wasn't necessarily the best use of it, just because we just thought we were going to grow so much faster than what it actually took to build the business. So, you know, I think if I would go back and tell myself is like, be a little bit more cautious, start a little bit smaller. I mean, we launched with, you know, several SKUs. Like, we could have launched with just two. We could have really managed the money. So it was just being more mindful of the actual launch of the business and the scale of the business, and not to rush into it so fast. Cause then we found ourselves at a point where, like, now we need more, we burned through that money. Now we need more money, but we're not having the sales generated that we expected to at this time. Like, we overpurchased packaging and, you know, all of these things, thinking that everything was going to be easier. Of course, we didn't expect we were going to be in COVID that long. And we thought that it would be a little bit easier to fundraise additional rounds and stuff like that. But I think that's the thing, is like, not being so optimistic. I mean, it's good to have that optimism and perseverance and things that you need to keep going. But when you're first launching, it's, you have to be very strategic and very mindful of how you're spending your money and the plans that you're doing going forward. I think about it often, and I use that as advice, because I've advised companies before I actually had my own businesses, right? And it's much different being an operator of a business, and the things and the ways that you have to think about the sustainability and long-term value of your business, and how you're going to stand in 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, because it gets hard. It sometimes gets harder, then it gets easier, and then it gets easier again. But I don't think as an entrepreneur, you think about that. You just think it's going to be, you hear all of these success stories, and you don't realize the success stories were like up, down, and then then finally up. You don't hear about all of the downs. It's something I think that people shy away from talking about, how difficult it is. So if anything, going back to my earlier self, I would say, like, be more mindful of where you're at. Be very strategic and thoughtful of how you plan to grow the business. Start small, take it easy, make the mistakes when you're not putting a whole bunch of money into it, and understand that it is a challenge, and not hold yourself to what you think everybody else is doing, right? That it's not just instant success overnight, because the reality is the instant success is only when you finally hear about it. You didn't know about the years they were building the business behind the scenes until one day they finally made it.
Yeah, I think those are two, I would say, common answers to that question. But it's really important, and it kind of ties back to something we were talking about kind of earlier in the beginning of this conversation, which is, you need that conviction and passion. And if you don't have it, you're probably not even take that step to really wanting to start your own business, or like go with a, you know, an online brand like this. And what comes with that, like, passion and conviction that leads people to start great brands, it also comes with that kind of like optimism, and knowing that, like, I know what I have is great. I know I can help people. I'm in love with this thing. I think it can help every person in the universe. And then you kind of couple that with, again, like, as you say, like, all you hear about and all you see on social media is like, I make $5 million a year selling envelopes, or, you know, all these things. It's like, it's so easy. I can teach you how to do it. Here's my course. You know what I mean? So yeah, from the outside looking in as a first-time entrepreneur, I think that's really, really good and valuable advice. And hearing it from people like you who have a legitimate, like, pretty grassroots story, that's why we do the pod. It's just like, for insights exactly like that, I think is very valuable to anybody that might be listening who is, you know, an entrepreneur maybe coming up in a new space, or, you know, a new entrepreneur off on their first venture. So I really appreciate that. Davina, I just want to say thank you again for coming on the pod. And I also just want to give you a quick opportunity to just kind of plug your website, you know, any socials, people listen to the pod, you know, they're interested in what you're doing, and, you know, want to keep in touch with you and the company, let them know the best way and how they can follow you guys.
Yeah, so we're on elementapothic.com. You can see in the background, but elementapothic.com is our website. We're also have social Instagram and TikTok as well with the same Element Apothic handle. And then me, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm quite active on there under my name, Davina Kaunohi. And I love collaborating. I love mentoring and advising as well. So if that there's any ideas or things you want to push around or talk about, then I'm also there for that too.
Amazing. Davina, thank you so much again. It was a really valuable conversation. I think people really appreciate the insights. So thank you again, Davina. And thank you all our listeners. And Davina, I'll be in touch soon. And I wish you the best of luck and continued success.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.